Chapter 3.
Who's that crying? Oh, my Lord, who's that crying?
Grandma moaned. Darcy rushed to Grandma's room. She was trying to get out of bed by herself.
One of the babies is crying, child.
No, no, Grandma, Darcy said. Let me bring you your walker. Here, I'll help you. Darcy wheeled the walker over to the side of the bed and slid her hand under Grandma's arm. There we go.
Who's that crying? Maddie Mae? Is that Maddie Mae bawling like that? Is that you crying, Charlotte? One of my babies is crying,
Grandma wailed. Maddie Mae and Charlotte were Grandma's daughters. Sometimes she thought they were children again.
Grandma, everything is all right, Darcy said. Do you want to go to the bathroom?
I'll help you. Look, here's the walker. Grandma's frail, veined hand grasped the walker as Darcy led her to the bathroom. Darcy remembered being a little girl and Grandma guiding the handlebars of her first bicycle. Grandma was vigorous then. She was strong and full of life until that stroke a year ago. Darcy got Grandma back to bed and sat in the rocking chair next to her until she fell asleep. Sometimes Mom and Darcy moved the rocker into the living room so Grandma could be with them, but it was hard for her to sit up for long. On good days, she sat there and rocked and looked out into the small garden in the window box. Sometimes Grandma would remember the names of her favorite flowers, black and yellow pansies and bright blue lobelias. Sometimes she would recall planting them in the window box, and other times she would say her own mother had planted them. Now, with dwindling white hair like sparse cotton on her dark scalp, she lay on her pillow, her brown eyes opening again, looking alert.
Angel Cake, you're so good to me, Grandma declared, smiling.
When she smiled, she almost looked as she had years earlier. Darcy had seen photographs of her grandmother when she was young. She was a beautiful, brown-eyed girl with thick, braided hair and a sweet little mouth. Now, smiling at Darcy, she did not look more than 60, though she was 77.
Grandma, I love you, Darcy said. Angel Cake, your daddy has to take you girls hiking again. Maybe tomorrow. When he comes home, we must tell him it's time to go hiking, Grandma said.
In the summer before Dad left, the whole family would go hiking in the Laguna Mountains. Not an exhausting hike, just one long enough to be fun. Mom would pack a lunch and leave it in the car. At the end of the hike, they would return to the same spot each time, and the girls would pounce on the mouth-watering goodies. Crispy fried chicken, potato salad, iced tea, juicy peaches, and the best treat of all, Grandma's sweet potato pie. When there was a full moon, the Willses and Grandma would sometimes drive up at night. They would ooh and ah over the moon, and Dad would point out constellations to Darcy and Jamie. The Big Dipper, Cassiopeia, the Seven Sisters, Orion. Then Mom would tell scary ghost stories right before it was time to head home. She was so good at telling them. Her favorite was called The Tale of the Moon Monster. As the girls stared up at the full moon, so clear and bright you could see the dark shadows of the mountains, Mom would spin the creepy tale.
Your mother has to tell her ghost stories, Grandma said, remembering too. I told her ghost stories when she was little. Now she has to tell them to you.
I remember, Grandma, Darcy said, overjoyed that for these brief moments, Grandma was almost normal.
The moon monster, Grandma said. How it crawls from the moon, trailing silk clouds, and comes down to the woods, and captures people to take back to the moon because it's lonely. Oh, Lord, how my mama scared me and my sisters with that story. And I told it to Maddie Mae and Charlotte and my boys.
Grandma leaned forward a little and looked around, a puzzled expression on her face.
Is Maddie Mae home yet? And Charlotte? Tell those girls to get in and stop roller skating on the sidewalk. It's almost dark now and I want those girls to come inside.
Yes, Grandma, Darcy said, holding Grandma's hand until she fell asleep again. A tear slipped down Darcy's cheek and left a salty trail across her lips. She mourned for what she had already lost of Grandma. The doctors did not know how long Grandma would live,
but the grieving had already begun. In the morning, Jamie ate her breakfast in sullen silence. Mom was still sleeping, but even if she had been at the breakfast table, she probably would not have noticed Jamie's attitude. Mom was too bone-tired and too nervous about the new hospital administrator to think of much else. "I'm sorry about last night," Darcy said. "I didn't mean to yell at you." Jamie forked scrambled eggs into her mouth and gulped her orange juice. She got up and said in a flat voice, "It doesn't matter. I mean, what do I care what Bobby Wallace says about me? Like, I care what that stupid fool is saying. I don't even notice him anymore. I don't care about any guy. I hate them all." "Some guys are nice," Darcy said. "How would you know, Darcy?" Jamie asked. "I know some nice guys at school, even if I don't date them. Guys like Hakeem Randall. He's always helping out with food drives and cleanup campaigns and stuff," Darcy replied. "Nice is such a stupid word," Jamie said, strapping on her backpack and heading out the door. Darcy didn't want to spy on her sister, but when Jamie was gone, Darcy looked in her room. She wanted to find out what the sound of shattering glass last night was all about. Darcy refused to look in Jamie's dresser drawers, but she did look in the trash can, which was full to overflowing. Sheets of newspaper were wrapped around something bulky, and Darcy carefully unwrapped it. She found a framed photograph of Bobby Wallace. Scrawled on the bottom was, "To my girl, Jamie, your Bobby." The glass over the photo had been smashed into splinters. The photo itself was defaced by a black felt pen. There were discarded clippings from school newspapers describing Bobby's triumphs on the football field. Jamie had carefully clipped out every story, however briefly Bobby was mentioned. Now she had torn the clippings into shreds. Darcy returned everything to the trash can, wrapping the newspapers around the shattered picture as Jamie had done. Darcy felt guilty that she poked around among Jamie's hurtful memories, though she felt relieved that Jamie had seemed to cut ties with Bobby. Poor Jamie. She was wounded by Dad's leaving, Grandma's drifting away, and now she was hurt again. On Saturday afternoon, Cooper and Tara picked up Darcy for the trip to the tidal pool. Cooper drove an old pickup truck with a camper shell on the back. Darcy brought along a thick notebook and her camera. All the way to the tidal pool, Tara and Cooper were exchanging good-natured insults, then roaring with laughter.
"Girl, you so fat. Every time you leave an all-you-can-eat restaurant, they close down for a few weeks," Cooper said, laughing at his own joke.
"Coop, you so dumb. You went to a movie and the man at the ticket window said, 'Under 17, not admitted.' So you went home and brought back 16 of your friends," Tara shot back.
Rocking side to side with laughter, she almost squeezed Darcy right out the door.
"Darcy girl, Coop's the most stupid guy at Bluford," Tara added. "He thinks the school was named Bluford because the guy who built it had a blue Ford."
"So Einstein," Cooper said, looking at Tara. "Who was the school named for?"
"A guy named Bluford, you dummy. Some famous old guy named Bluford," Tara answered.
Cooper roared again with laughter.
"See, she don't know from nothing who Bluford is. If you so smart, you ought to know who this Bluford dude was."
"I do know," Tara said.
"His name was Jim Bluford, and he was a great football player who won the Super Bowl 5 times in a row."
Darcy smiled. Tara was faking, of course. She had no more idea than Cooper who Bluford was.
"A football player?" Cooper bellowed. "What kind of crazy answer is that, girl? You must be tripping. Nobody would name a school after some jock. Not even after Michael Jordan. No way. Bluford has to be some big-time politician or something."
"Actually," Darcy said, "the school was named for Guyon Bluford, the first African-American to go up in space. He rode one of the space shuttles." Tara wrinkled her nose.
"Get out of here. You're so weird to know something like that, girl."
"They talk about it at school assemblies," Darcy explained.
"Like we listened during those boring assemblies about stuff that happened 100 years ago," Tara said.
"Bluford went into space in the 1980s, Darcy added.
"That's why no one likes you, girl," Tara said.
"You know too much. Maybe when we get to that tidal pool, we ought to feed it to the sharks," Cooper said, laughing loudly.
There are no sharks in tidal pools, Darcy said. The water is very shallow. I mean, picture a shark in a wading pool, right?
Man, this girl's making me crazy, Cooper told Tara. Let's lose her. We could say it was an accident.
You should be glad to learn something, Darcy retorted. Do you want to be ignorant all your life?
What's that supposed to mean? Cooper shot back angrily. Just as I've been left back in school, you think I'm going to be ignorant all my life? He charged.
That's not what I meant at all. Darcy tried to explain but gave up, realizing what a dreadful mistake this outing was. The three sat in silence until the pickup truck rattled to a stop at the end of a street. From there, a long twisting path led to the tidal pool. Darcy slung her camera over her back and followed the winding, rocky path toward the ocean's edge. She was happy to be out of the truck.
What's a tidal pool, anyway? Tara asked in a bored voice.
It's like a pool for the tide, Cooper chuckled. Like rich folks got pools, and the tide got a pool. You hear what I'm saying?
It's a place where the sea meets the land, Darcy said. The tide goes in and out, so sometimes the water is very shallow, and sometimes it's deeper.
Different kinds of creatures live in the water at different levels.
Maybe this would be a good place to push her in,
Tara said as they made their way past a treacherous spot on the trail. Below, the water rolled against the rocks, making a foamy mist.
Nah, Cooper said. You needed to get your project done. You gonna flunk biology as dumb as you are. Then you'll be stuck in high school for the rest of your natural life. This brainy girl's gonna get you out of high school before you got as many gray hairs as my granny.
You really are hilarious, you two, Darcy said sarcastically. You should have your own TV show. When they finally reached the tidal pool, Cooper exclaimed,
Man, it's crawling with weird things. Look at all the stuff floating around. Too bad we ain't bring bottles to catch some of that stuff.
We are not allowed to remove anything, Darcy warned. That will spoil the ecosystem of the tidal pool. We can take lots of pictures, though.
What's that green thing? Tara asked.
Ew, it's disgusting.
That's a sea cucumber, Darcy said.
Looks like you, Coop, Tara declared.
Hey, babe, I see you right there. That wiggling thing under the water. Look at it. It's just spitting image, Cooper taunted.
That's a sea urchin, Darcy said.
She snapped some pictures of the tidal pool and began to write observations in her notebook. She already saw a starfish and more sea urchins along with a lot of kelp and algae. Some of the rubbery kelp was lying on the rocks in small patches of sand. Darcy was peering into the water, intent on observing a purple sun star, when she felt something large and wriggly drop down the back of her pullover sweater.
Cooper!
Darcy screamed as the laughing boy danced away in glee. Tara was doubled over laughing, too. Darcy felt the creature scuttling along her back. Quickly, she grabbed her sweater and began shaking it violently.
Get it out! She screamed.
It's only a leech, Tara said, laughing wildly. I mean, it's got a million legs and it sucks blood, but leeches gotta live too, girl.
Whoa, look at that girl dance,
Cooper said as Darcy frantically tried to shake the bug from her sweater. The black insect, a water bug, finally dropped to the sand and scurried away into the weeds. Furious, Darcy aimed a kick at Cooper's shins.
Ow!
He cried, stumbling backwards.
I knew you were crude and stupid, Darcy screamed at the pair. But I didn't think you were so childish that you'd do something like that.
It was a joke, Cooper said, rubbing his leg where Darcy had kicked him. Girl, you got a mean hoof.
Can't you get off your high horse long enough to take a joke? Tara yelled, siding with Cooper.
Darcy was not surprised by that. These two were cut from the same cloth, she thought. Darcy felt angry and humiliated.
I'm telling Miss Reed on Monday that I want another partner.
Good, Tara shot back. I don't want to work with no stuck-up girl who thinks she's better than everyone else. You ain't no better than the rest of us.
Darcy shook with rage as she stuffed her notebook into her backpack.
I'll find another way home. I don't want to ride with you, she snapped.
You ain't welcome to ride with us, Cooper shouted. You probably busted my leg.
Good,
Darcy shot back over her shoulder as she started up the path.
Next time you'll think twice before you play stupid pranks.
Darcy was breathing hard when she reached the top of the hill where the street was. Her anger had cooled a little. Cooper's stunt was stupid, but he didn't mean any real harm by it. It was just that he was 17, going on 5 years old. Darcy walked down the nearly deserted street to the bus stop. As she stood there waiting for the bus, Tara and Cooper roared by in the pickup truck. They yelled something at her, but Darcy pretended not to hear. Darcy dreaded the long bus trip home. By car, the trip took about 25 minutes, but by the time she changed buses, the trip home would take an hour and a half. Darcy had been sitting on the bus bench for 10 minutes when she noticed an old silver Toyota parked under a tree down the street. An overweight, middle-aged man wearing a New York Yankees baseball cap sat at the wheel. Darcy could not make out his face through the dirty front windshield. He seemed to be looking in her direction, but she could not be sure. Darcy looked around nervously. She wished the bus would hurry up and come. There was no one else on the street, and it was getting darker as the sun slid behind the horizon. Darcy wasn't even sure what time the bus was supposed to come. Usually buses ran every 30 minutes, but maybe this was a less popular route and they didn't run that often. Glancing at the Toyota, Darcy was worried. What if that guy gets out of his car and comes walking over? What if he's dangerous? What if he has a gun or a knife? Suddenly, the door of the sedan opened. The driver swung a leg out. He was getting out of the car. Darcy looked around the empty street desperately. Maybe she should just take off running. What if he had chased her? What if he had a gun and shot at her while she ran? She could not run a bullet.